Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! Oh,
LeBron James with no regard for human life.
12 seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
Iverson against Gil. The crowd on its feet. Allen for the win.
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What up? What up? Welcome back to the Sneaker History Podcast. My name is Nick Engvall, and I'm here with my guy Mike Guillory to talk some sneakers tonight. What's going on, Mike? How you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. I'm ready to talk some sneakers in this week strong, man. How about you?
Yeah, man, I'm good. I'm ready to talk about some Nike Dunks. Got a few of them to roll through tonight. So, and some interesting acquisitions by Nike and some others we'll get into. But
yeah, man.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy news. I mean, like, yeah. So before we get into it, though, I wanted to shout out, see here, Sadra Azizi on our iTunes, Apple Podcast for leaving us a review. We just appreciate you guys taking the time to leave us a review. It helps us expand, reach new audience. We're really trying to grow the community here, get a little more conversation going on. And that's the best way to do it. And if you want to go a little bit further and support us in another way, you can check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/sneakerhistory. There's a few levels there that you can support the podcast, support the site. So why don't you start us out, Mike, with a story that you were looking at with Nike acquiring a new artificial intelligence company.
Yeah, pretty nuts, because we all know that the brand have, you know, technology to, you know, figure out what we want to buy and whatnot. You go onto the Nike site right now, click on something. A couple of days from now, you're going to see the same shoe advertised on a banner of a different website. Or even if you're a Nike member, you're going to get emails like, hey, we saw you looking at these last time. You may like this one plus a different one. So it's nothing new. But I feel like Nike took it to a whole new level, because they actually acquired a company who engages in retail predictive analytics and demand sensing. So they took over the whole thing, where they basically can't be used by another company, which is nuts. I mean, I don't know if any other company's done this. It's never been in the news, at least, as far as I know. Please correct me if I'm wrong in the comments, but this is crazy. I mean, it just shows how determined Nike is to stay on top. And it also shows that they can see these other guys a little closer in the rearview mirror than they used to be. So, again, we always say competition makes for better product, or at least we hope it does. So I'm hoping this kind of is that same concept. Like, hey, we want to know what you guys want. We want to give you the best product possible. We want to be better than the other guys. And so we're going to, you know, take some pretty solid steps and acquire a company just to find out what you guys like. I think it's pretty cool, pretty different. What do you think about it, man?
Yeah, I think it's super dope. I mean, Nike. So I think last year I remember reading about them buying a company that does like foot scanning, like 3D scanning of, you know, feet. And I think this is really interesting, because you've seen a lot of mergers, acquisitions, all these things. Actually, we're going to talk about Off-White getting bought by somebody here in a little bit, but like, it's interesting that Nike is going at it from a technology standpoint, as opposed to, you know, or like, I guess, high level technology, rather than, let's say, you know, this isn't the best example, but let's say like Foot Locker and Goat or something like that, where it's like you're kind of playing in the same space and you're, you know, like Nike bought Converse, you know, 10 years ago or whatever that was now. Adidas bought Reebok. All these kind of things happen pretty regularly. It's cool to see them kind of step in outside of that and really committing to a much higher level of commit of technology, of, you know, the artificial intelligence, using the data to drive their business. Now, I do think that the downside to all of this is that, you know, as we talked about on previous episodes, I think this is going to lead to more and more internal or direct to consumer releases. I think you're going to see a lot more retailers, wholesalers, all that stuff is going to start dwindling because they can refine all these processes and they can almost like perfect the, you know, experience for direct to consumer, where there's really not a whole lot of value for smaller businesses, or that's not the right way to say it, but there's not a whole lot of value for them to sell to somebody at a discounted rate when, you know, most of the time people are going to come directly to them to buy. You know, yeah. there's always points where, you know, you want the energy of, like, you know, let's say an undefeated Kobe 4 or a Concepts Dunk or a Supreme Dunk or whatever, but there's going to be less and less of that. And I think it's going to be unfortunate because a lot of the like mid-level stores that aren't super hyped up or super popular are probably going to see their accounts kind of fade away, or hopefully not, but like even taken away, like we talked about with Premier in San Mateo a few months back. But I do think, like, from a business perspective, it's really cool that they're investing in this kind of technology.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. I didn't think about that though. Like, this is pretty much perfecting the art of, hey, we give you what you want without you having to leave your house. So that aspect thinks, because I think as you and Robbie, even though he's not here tonight, we still like going into stores, going into, like, you know, the boutiques, the family-owned stores, being able to, like, interact with people and, you know, touch the product before we buy it. So, yeah, I can see that's definitely a downfall for anybody who has the same feelings we have about, you know, the physical brick and mortars.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that it's super important to you know, shop at the small stores. Like, I 100% support that. I mean, I have, you know, friends at the brands and at places like Foot Locker and Finish Line. And, you know, I buy from them fairly regularly as well. But as much as I can, I try to support the smaller stores and just go in and see what people have and check stuff out in person, because at the end of the day, that's like a more genuine connection to me. And
yeah.
I appreciate the refining of the process for a brand like this to do this kind of thing. But
yeah,
it's still kind of, you know, it's going to hurt a lot of people too. So I can see both sides of it, I guess, but.
Yeah. And you can't forget the one thing we always talk about: going into a store, you can just find some of those hidden gems. Sometimes you just can't find online, so that you can definitely beat that feeling. So this is definitely, you don't want this to take over. You definitely want the online experience to be better, preferably the sneakers app, but we won't talk about that. Yeah, I hope that this doesn't replace a nice, you know, retail store. Being a sneaker collector, like, it's too important to have a retail store. And if you turn into just online, I mean, it takes part of the thrill away from the whole, you know, culture of collecting.
Yeah, I agree. Talking about, like, a store that can actually create some hype, I don't know if this is actually hype down the right way, but Supreme's got some new dunks coming with Nike, and I'm not a fan. They've got a jewel swoosh on them. They've got a star on the heel with Supreme branding across it, and kind of like a metallic kind of toe. So they've got a navy and gold with a gum bottom, black and silver with a gray bottom. And then I think there's white and red.
Black and silver. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what it is.
But I don't know, man. What do you think of these ones?
Almost don't want to give my opinion because it doesn't matter what I say. They're going to get bought up in troves anyway. I mean, I think I like the color blocking of them. I'll say that. I think it's pretty cool color blocking, but I don't like the materials they execute it with. It looks like the silver, like the metallic part, almost looks like a type of posit, like some kind of foam posit, armor posit. I'm sure it's most likely not, but just the coloring of it, that metallic look, I don't really like it.
Yeah, it does. It does kind of look like that. I'm not a fan. I mean, one of the other shoes we want to talk about tonight is the Nike SB Air Jordan 1, like the Eric Austin, like basically UNC colorway, right? The Lowe's.
Yeah.
And
that's a shoe right there.
Yeah, that one's that, you know, it's just kind of classic color blocking. Got a cool little story talking about the mall that he used to buy them from, $24.99, all that. I think that's like really well done. When I look at the Supreme Dunks, I'm kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of the same weird stuff that Supreme has done in the last couple of years with their shoes, at least with their Nike collabs. And they're honestly not as, I guess, mass appealing as they used to be with the elephant print. And, you know, to me, it would be a no-brainer for Supreme to do, you know, variations of the elephant print on an Air Jordan 1 SB. I mean, that would be such a home run, right? Like, mix it up a little bit, whether it's new colors or not, new color blocking, either way. And people love elephant print. People love, you know, the Jordan 1 SB stuff because it's kind of the newest thing. I think that would have just been such a better choice.
Yeah, it was a perfect opportunity because people, all right, I won't say the Jordan 1 Low is filling out completely because I was actually able to find the Navy pair at a local skate shop here. They didn't quite sell out, but they had way more hype around Jordan 1 than it used to be. I mean, I've always liked them, but I feel like the mass majority of people weren't big fans of Jordan 1 back a couple years ago, where you can snatch them up for what, $50, you know, sit on a sale rack. But ever since the Travis Scott has been rumored to release, the Jordan 1 Low has been way more popular than I've seen. And this has been a perfect opportunity to just team up and like, hey, let's pay homage to where we got the elephant print from for our original dunk that we did. And let's put it on the shoe that created the elephant print.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think the other thing that's weird about this is the like jewel swoosh on the side. You know, the only time they ever use that to my knowledge is on the Air Max 1. And I don't know, it just looks really out of place on the dunk.
Yeah. It only belongs in the Air Force 1 or Air Max 1. Anything other than that, no.
Yeah. I mean, it just, I don't know. And I don't know. I'm just not feeling them at all. So maybe, you know, this is one of those cases where, you know, I would love to, one of the other dunks that's coming out, the Futura off-white stuff. And every time I see like these early pictures, I'm just kind of like, all right, are these actually decent? Like the pictures are always terrible when they first come out. So I don't know, but even the kind of, I don't know if they're mock-ups, but, or if they're actual like catalog scans or something that I saw of the Supremes, you know, the jewel swoosh just doesn't look right to me on it for some reason. I'd almost rather see it with no swoosh or something like that. That's like, okay. I do like the color, the navy and gold and the black and silver, but I don't think I would even try to grab either of these. They're only $110 though, which, you know, I guess that's better than some other stuff that's out there. So,
I mean, I can save $110 and just not buy them. So it's But I mean, I know Supreme's MO has always been to, hey, we're going to make something outrageous to be, you know, they're the against the machine. Like we want to be the anti-hype, but it's kind of funny because they are like the hypest brand out there. But they try to make things, I feel like they make them ugly on purpose just to see if someone's going to buy them. And I mean, no, I can't shame them for anything because they have a game plan and they execute every time, no matter what anyone says, no matter what you, me, any other podcast, any other YouTube personality says, they all sell out.
Yeah.
And they're going to keep with that model. I mean, why change it if it ain't broken?
Yeah. I mean, they do tend to kind of do weird stuff. And I think at times the weirdness is still like at an acceptable mainstream consumer level where, you know, something like the Jordan 14 they did last season, you know, not too many people care about that shoe. It's, I don't really like studs on shoes anyway, but like, even if it didn't have that, the shoe's kind of like, all right, it's like, okay, but there's not enough of a story there for me. Like why the 14? But sometimes, you know, they've had the chance to do really dope shoes. You know, they did, you know, like all those old trainers when the trainer one low or whatever that came out.
Blazers.
Yeah. I just, I don't know. Like, I guess with the Dunks, it's more of what they've done that was so good in the past. Like, even though you know, what was it, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when the red and elephant came out, that shoe is not by any means new. It's not, you know, it's not genius by any means, but it is genius because it's just stick with that same theme, because you know that people look at Supreme Dunks as like, you know, some of the best looking dunks ever made. And they could have done that with this and had, you know, three more iconic shoes selling for, you know, crazy amounts, hyping them up on the secondary market. And instead, maybe we're on the wrong side of this. What do you guys think that are out there listening? Is this Supreme Dunk going to sell? I mean, it's obviously going to sell, but is it going to actually be like respected the way that previous Supreme Dunks have? I'll be curious to know what everybody's thinking about these ones.
Oh yeah. And you know, I had a free idea for Supreme right now. If you use it, just send me a pair. I don't care. I don't need the money. I just want a pair of them. But people love box logos. Those t-shirts are stupid expensive on the resale market. If they would have come out with a solid red, with a white midsole, red outsole, solid black, white midsole, black outsole, and then all white, and just maybe, you know, in the panel, you know, that the midfoot panel where the swoosh is, if you just cover that, like put a piece of a box logo or use that on some of like the mug guard and stuff with the Supreme logo in it, basic shoe, something people like, the box logo, and I guarantee it would clean up with that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that'd be a super dope idea. I think the weird part about it to me is that, or the reason why I guess I'm pushing back so much is I'm into the Dunk, right? Like the Dunk is kind of like, it's kind of like the Jordan 1 or something where it's like, you don't mess it up too badly, right? Like you don't go too crazy with it where, you know, it's not that other shoes, you know, are better or worse, but you know, when they're doing like Delta Forces way back in the day or the Blazers or trainers, you know, like any of the, like, I mean, they even had their own, whatever that Nike SB Supreme 94 thing was back in like 2010 or so. And then it's cool. Like go as crazy as you want. But when you already know the formula for the Dunk, and you know that everyone loves just the classic color blocking on them. It's almost like a Jordan 1, right? If you put the right colors on a Jordan 1, the right paneling, you know, the right colors on the right panels of a Jordan 1, it almost doesn't matter the colors if you just keep it simple and, you know, subtle. And what's crazy is, and Supreme has done this, right? Like they did the, you know, the Air Force Ones back where, I forget what it was, probably like 2012 or something, there was like a black with a gum bottom, camo with a gum bottom, and they were just super clean. And
yeah,
I mean, I don't even like Air Force Ones, but those were so nice that it's like, okay, well, if I'm gonna buy one, this would be a good one to have.
That one,
yeah.
But it was perfect. It just had the one little hit of Supreme logo with the tag right in the back of the swoosh.
Yeah. Yep.
Super perfect.
Yeah, and I think what's interesting too is there was no safety colorway on this, right? You think of like maybe the Air Max 98s, the Jordan 5s, the Up-Tempos even. The Up-Tempos had like the white and red, which obviously going to be super popular. But if it wasn't, then the all black is still pretty solid for you know, like for anybody that doesn't want to like flaunt that bad. It's just interesting that they didn't leave anything out there for, you know, kind of to play it safe at all. And I wonder how it'll turn out for them. But
we know the answer. We just got only thing that'll change is the resale market. But again, Supreme gives zero craps about what you're doing in the resale market because they've made their money. So that's all in the population at that point. But they're gonna sell out. Supreme's gonna make their cash. They're gonna do another collaboration next season.
Yeah, but
also wrote.
I think at some point you got to be careful with it because if they go too far down this like kind of anti path, especially now that they've got big money behind them, right? Then you got to worry about is if people don't think that they can resell the stuff, what happens? Because most of the stuff that Supreme makes is bought to flip at some point, whether that's tomorrow or a year or two down the road. And a lot of times you can make a little bit of money right off the bat. Every once in a while, you can make a lot of money right off the bat. But the more they have these kind of, I would say miss, you know, like, was it last year they did like the Gatos, which are like, it's a dope shoe, but I just don't think that it's like hype enough for them to really benefit from it. The air streaks with the flames were a little weird. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I haven't looked at prices, but I don't know. I just feel like they're borderline, like, you know, going a little too far without, it's like you could do one release that is like guaranteed to be a crazy sellout and sell a ton on the secondary market. But then you could go back and turn, you know, something out that's like whatever, crazy, who cares if it sells that, you know, because they are going to sell out, but they want to keep the hype
reward.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know.
Hopefully,
I
mean, get back to the skate room. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and maybe that's the point of it. I don't know. Maybe there's a cool story behind it that we don't know yet. So we'll keep an eye out for it. And if not, you know, we'll just move on to the next hype brand. And I guess tonight that's Off-White, and they're basically being purchased by Farfetch, sounds like. So they have essentially, so Farfetch basically bought the parent company of Off-White, which is New Guards Group. It's also the parent company, I want to say, of Heron Preston's brand, and I think there's a few others. Palm Angels is in that group. It's really interesting. I'm kind of blown away by it. I wonder what it will do for the Off-White stuff. I mean, people probably don't know that yet, but what's also really, really interesting about it is that Farfetch bought Stadium Goods last year. So, you know, the same thing that we talked about last episode where, you know, there's like Foot Locker and Goat, you know, traditional market and secondary market. This is kind of the same thing where you have, you know, complete control of the production on the traditional market. And then you own one of the biggest platforms on the secondary market with Stadium Goods. So I don't know. What do you think of this one, Mike?
Double dipping. That is, when you said it, I didn't realize it until just now. think that might be the smartest purchase I've ever seen by a company to, you know what, we're going to hit you on the front end with this off-white t-shirt for $200. They're going to slap you in the back end when it costs $1,000. And we're going to hit profit both sides.
Yeah.
That is insane. That is such a good business move. I mean, taking this, the sneaker talk out of it, that is an amazing business move for them because Stadium Goods is a really good brand when it comes to really reputable brand when it comes to the secondary market. And I mean, in this climate of the secondary market, you know, with StockX having its issues, it's only going to be better for their business because they haven't had any of those issues. So now Farfetch is going to be most likely some increase in business, Stadium Goods. And then if you have, I didn't realize he had Heron Preston as well. And he's big with Nike right now.
Yeah.
Virgil, I feel like, has his own building at Nike at this point. he's going to release, we're talking about dunks. He has three more off-white dunks coming out. They're going to sell them for $110 to $150, flipping for, if they hit, or flipping for, you know, $1,100 minimum.
Yeah.
Stadium Goods. So,
yeah, I mean, and they got Futura on those ones too. So you've got like old school and new school together. So I think it's going to actually be probably really popular. But so a little bit more details on this deal. It looks like Farfetch is basically buying, the company's called New Guards Group. The deal is worth about $675 million. It's expected to close in the third quarter, with cash and stock transaction expected to split 50-50. So just to go through like what New Guard is, they started in 2015 and they essentially have licenses for streetwear brands Off-White, Palm Angels, and a handful of others, Unravel Project, Heron Preston. So New Guards actually owns roughly 75% of all the brands that they have under their umbrella. So they don't own Off-White 100%, but they own approximately like 75% of Off-White. And, you know, like as an investor, right? Like that's probably kind of common, I would assume. But I'm sure that Virgil didn't think of this as a scenario. You know, it'd be crazy to have somebody, you know, turn around and, you know, sell out part of the business, which, you know, Farfetch is smart. They're not going to mess with anything. Like we haven't seen anything crazy change with Stadium Goods since they bought Stadium Goods in, was that November or December of last year. And I can't imagine that they would do anything to mess up the, you know, the hype of Off-White right now. But, what's really interesting is like all of these brands. So, you know, Farfetch has like all their, what do they have? I think they talk about having like 600, 700 boutiques on their platform or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know, most, I'm sure that most of them are probably selling stuff like Off-White or Heron Preston. So it's going to be really interesting to see like how big they get, because the other part is, I think it was, probably 4 or 5 months ago, Farfetch actually bought Giuseppe Zanotti, Brunello Cucinelli, and Stella McCartney, which are three like super high end brands.
Yeah, they're straight luxury brands.
So they're going up and down kind of the, they're going up and down kind of the scale here, which is just, I don't know, really interesting. I'm kind of dumbfounded by it, because they're about to own like so much of this.
Yeah, because a lot of things, like, I feel like you're basically gone to battle with the LVHM. That's the other, like, Louis Vuitton that owns all of, like, they own gangs of luxury items. Or that house does, at least. And, man, they've taken a way different approach, and I think is I'm actually excited. I have no stake in this at all, but it's so cool just to see how they did it. And they snuck in the back door, man, and got the, you know, hottest designer in luxury goods and streetwear right now. And they're doing the right thing, because even though they're just basically investing in these items, and they're not really, I wouldn't say they're producing their own product, but they see what the people like. They're following the right trends and capitalizing on it like no other. I mean, you can't beat that. I mean, they're laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah, definitely. And so the other thing that I think is really interesting about this whole acquisition too is I can't remember when exactly it was, but I remember reading something about JD.com, which is like one of the biggest like platforms in China. They were one of the first companies to invest in Farfetch like years back. And just like within the last 6 months or so, Farfetch supposedly kind of integrated into their platform. So now all these, you know, boutiques are not only selling to like US under Farfetch.com, but they can sell to China through the JD.com platform, which I mean, I don't know, you know, thinking of like the competition for that, I don't know, they like StockX, Goat, you know, maybe eBay, but I don't know if anybody's really, I guess like you would throw the Real in there, 'cause they're doing like high end, stuff, but none of them are as integrated globally as Farfetch. So it's almost bananas how far out in front they are. If they continue to have success, you know, it'll be really tough to see anybody competing with them, because they've got so many partnerships and so many, you know, got their kind of like, it's not to say it in a bad way, but like their tentacles and everything, right? Like they've got, you know, hands everywhere to be moving these things from, you know, wherever it needs to go, basically, to make the most money. It's
super strategic.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I hope that it doesn't change, you know, a lot of the partnerships that Virgil has now. I think that, you know, it would be, like I said earlier, I think it'd be really dumb if Farfetch even messed with the stuff that Virgil has going, because it's his energy and his, you know, kind of vision that's going to keep things moving at the, you know, at the top of the hype channel, I guess. But
they're not going to touch him. I guarantee they're going to let him be. It's like, hey, you just keep doing whatever you need to do to keep these people happy out here.
Yeah, and that's like the easy thing, right? The temptation will come for them when they look at, okay, we have a license to create off-white clothing, apparel, whatever, right? Now, a lot of times what happens is, you know, big businesses look at it and say, okay, well, let's just make more product to sell in order to make more money. But with hype stuff, that's not always how it works. Sometimes, I would say even more than sometimes, you need to play the game to have people wanting the product. So if you flood the market thinking that everybody wants to buy off-white belts, and now you've got the price of off-white belts going on sale every, you know, on every platform, then you just killed all the, you know, kids don't want that stuff if it's on sale. You know, like we want it if it's on sale, but we don't want it to go on sale, right? So
exactly.
It's an interesting thing. So it'll be crazy to see how they kind of, you know, play the game. They definitely made a huge move there, you know, acquiring the whole New Guards group, because like you said, Heron Preston stuff, I think he's kind of the next in line for that kind of Chicago. I know he's, I don't know if he's from San Francisco originally, but I know he spent a lot of time living in San Francisco. But he's still part of that kind of Kanye circle that has been really successful in their own, with their own brands. And he's kind of the next to blow up, in my opinion. So, yeah, that'll be interesting. And Palm Angels, you see that everywhere too. So I'm sure they, they've got like, they've got a lot of maintaining on their hands to keep these brands relevant and cool.
Yeah, man. I'm gonna keep following that one for a while and see how it turns out.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too, man. So let us know what you think. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like even though Off-White's everywhere, I almost feel like it's kind of dying out anyway. So
yeah, at least for us. I mean, I think as just like a person who kind of realizes after a while, like, you know what, I'm not going to keep chasing these. They're kind of dying out for me, but you know, they still have people who got their bots ready, man. Pretty quick away.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's one of those things where as long as the brand is relevant enough, most of us will at least attempt to try to get something. But it's got to be really close to the, you know, the tipping point of its cool factor, in my opinion, because yeah. I think that with Virgil doing stuff, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe with Virgil doing stuff with like Louis Vuitton, that actually helps the Off-White brand. But I don't see him as, you know, as like broadly influential and like the massive following that someone like Kanye has. Right. And he's obviously, you know, much more successful than say Don C, who's also from that group, and Heron Preston, but Heron Preston's done stuff, you know, behind the scenes for a number of years now. And I think it's now just his time to put his brand out and kind of get the recognition that everybody else has gotten. But with the Off-White stuff, I'm really curious to see how if it can live, you know, beyond the original kind of wow factor, because now we've seen kind of the formula so many times over that, you know, it's just about the hype at this point. It's not, you know, it doesn't have that fresh out of the box, like new way of thinking. Oh my God, what is he doing? This is crazy. You've never seen this before. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch, but,
Hopefully, I mean, I haven't had any of his product, but man, I wish him the best. I mean, I hope that his product can actually stand and touch the tile as opposed to just, oh, here's a flash in the pan. You did a Nike with this. All right, next. Because that happens to some people, but hopefully because he is, you know, within that same group of people who made successful product and made it last over time, hopefully he can put some thought, keep putting thought into his product to keep making it, you know, something that people want to continue to have around.
Yeah, and I don't have anything against him, and I think he's incredible in what he does. I think that it's just I'm really focusing kind of on the Off-White brand when I'm talking about this stuff, just to kind of clarify. And
And
the reason why I say that is because Off-White, let's say collaborations with Nike, that's one thing, right? You know, you throw a collaboration together with Nike and almost all the time, it's going to be better than what Nike releases on their own, especially with somebody that has the, like, you know, popularity of Virgil. But if you look at like Off-White's footwear, for instance, none of that stuff has been super popular. Like they've got some cool designs. There's been a few that have sold really well. A majority of it hasn't been like crazy, you know, popular. It's also pretty expensive, so it's hard to maintain that. And I'm thinking that if I'm a customer that's willing to spend $1,000 on a pair of shoes, am I buying Off-White or am I just buying Virgil's Louis Vuitton stuff? Probably Virgil's Louis Vuitton stuff, because there's way more clout, you know, way more, you know, Instagram cred on that stuff. Right. Which is why people are buying that anyway. So that's kind of where I wanted to clarify, you know, I
got you.
I think for him, he's good. He's going to be doing amazing stuff the rest of our lives. Like, you know, hopefully, God willing, but he's always pushing people beyond their comfort zone. And I can't say how much I rock with that concept in itself. So if, you know, to me, that's like everlasting, you know, success. But, yeah, I don't know, man. Let's wrap here. And if you're listening, let us know what you think. What's going to go on with Off-White? Is it just going to become another one of those brands under the umbrella of Farfetch and we're going to forget about it? Or will Virgil be able to keep it alive with his own kind of collabs and keep it away from the, I guess the mainstream of the big business that's now behind it. So, but just before we get out of here, I want to thank everybody for listening. And again, like if you have a minute or two, leave us a review on iTunes, or even better, hop on our Patreon page. We're starting to create exclusive content over there, and show us some love over there. If you feel like pushing some money our way, we would definitely appreciate it. Cause our goal is to keep from being silenced by any of the people that are going to be advertising on the podcast. And that's why we want to keep traditional advertising off of it as long as we can. But we also want to make sure that we're continuing to make it better for you guys. So we appreciate you listening. As always, you can follow us at Sneaker History on all platforms. And we got a couple of interviews coming next week, I think, maybe next week and the following week that will be really, really dope. So stay tuned for that. And Mike, let them know how they can find you.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Sneaker History. I will have some more articles coming you guys' way. I know I've been a little away from lately, but I'm back and ready to write some more. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter under MadWatcher789. And thank you again, as always, for everyone who listens to us, everyone who interacts with us. We appreciate you guys. You help us get better every time we do this. So appreciate you very much.
Yes, sir. And you can follow me at Nick Engvall on all platforms. And as always, we appreciate you, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
See ya.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I want to ask a few favors of you. First off, if you're still listening, I wanted to thank you for supporting us and continuing to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, and I'm going to assume that you do if you're listening this long, please take a couple of minutes, head over to iTunes, drop us a review, leave a comment, make sure you're subscribed. It's the only way that we can really continue to grow our audience and reach new people and continue to grow the podcast. Second thing is, if you haven't already, head over to sneakerhistory.com/shop. You can pick up t-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, and some other miscellaneous things. And all of these things go to help us continue this podcast and continue the site and just pay for miscellaneous expenses that come up. We're not trying to make a killing off of it, but it would be awesome to have your support. And who knows, maybe run into one of you on the streets one day rocking a Sneaker History t-shirt. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Peace. Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly 2 decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.